Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guests.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. We are at episode 119. Welcome along. I'm Paul Spain.
I'm David Hallett, technology columnist, Waikato Times.
And I'm Chris Gardner, the technology editor from the Waikato Times.
Thank you both for joining the New Zealand Tech Podcast today. Good to have you in Auckland again.
You're welcome. It's always good to have a nice little drive north.
Well, there's been a bit of news this week around a particular Microsoft product, Windows. And first up, we're going to have a little chat about Windows Blue. Now, in the last few hours, the last sort of 24 hours or so, this new version of Windows, I guess it's the update to Windows 8, has leaked online, and a number of people have been playing around with this this new build of Windows. Now, what do we know about Windows Blue so far? I believe it's an update that is going to be sort of like an annual update. They're talking about yearly updates to Windows now, in a similar way that we see yearly updates to our mobile operating systems and have done, particularly with iOS for some time and Windows Phone as well. So we've got Windows Blue coming to Windows 8 tablets and PCs, Windows Blue coming to Microsoft's phones, the Windows Phone platform, and also their server platform. So this first version, we had a little bit of a look at a video of it before. Chris, what was your take on Windows Blue?
Well, first thing is, I'm not sure if the name's right, because...
Well, it's sort of a code name, isn't it?
Sure. Blue, I mean, it doesn't have me feeling blue at all. I'm quite excited when I saw it. I'm a big fan of the Windows Phone, and what Windows Blue is going to do, by the looks of things, is give us some of the functionality of the Windows Phone, particularly Windows Phone 8, into the Windows 8 platform. And the biggest thing, the thing that I love the most about it, from what I've just seen, is the ability to resize tiles to whatever you want to have it, you know, and really customize your start screen, the Metro screen. We're not allowed to use Metro anymore, are we?
Call it what you like. Microsoft don't call it much. So,
the start screen. The thing that bugs me with Windows 8, if I have got a bug about it at the moment, is that it isn't very customizable, particularly that start screen. And I think Blue is going to address that.
This brings it a bit more
that.
In the right direction,
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's bringing the smartphone platform and the PC platform closer together and making them much similar and more user-friendly, I think.
Yeah, it does. There seems to be quite a few features there in this Windows Blue version of Windows 8, which I'm not sure what the final name for it will be. I don't think it'll be Windows 9.
No.
It doesn't seem quite that far ahead, but I mean, who knows how they go with actually branding this thing. Lots of those sort of smaller and cosmetic changes to the way you can run multiple apps on the screen, I thought, you know, stood out. For instance, the split screen that we've been able to do in traditional Windows for years and years, that disappeared in Windows 8, certainly in the Metro type or modern UI view. Where you couldn't just split your screen in half.
Mm.
So it's good to see that that's back. I think they're saying you'll be able to have up to four apps on the screen at once, which is great. They brought through a lot of other sort of items that before you had to sort of dig behind the scenes to really to get at, in terms of control panel settings and various other things. And the SkyDrive integration. David, what do you think about some of that SkyDrive stuff? Because you've used that on Windows Phone 8. Do you think this is sort of a big jump forward, or will it just bring Windows up to speed with other platforms?
Well, you know, all my photographs are automatically synced with SkyDrive from my smartphone. And that was one thing that I lacked from Windows 8, I guess, was the synchronization straight into SkyDrive.
So are you one of these guys that while at a conference, you'll stand up holding a big tablet and use it to take photos?
Absolutely.
there's always one, isn't there, that does that at a conference. Everyone else just holding up their smartphone. Someone stands up with this huge tablet and holds it up to
much better resolution, so you can see the actual photo.
Yep. Hey, we're from the Waikato, where everything is bigger and better.
All right. Well, I'm glad that Environment Waikato, or whatever the local council is down there, are sponsoring this trip. Thanks for that, chaps. No, seriously, it looks like that SkyDrive, which is really the cloud side of the integration, they've really drawn from what we've seen in Windows Phone 8, which is that ability to back up most of what's in your device straight to the cloud. And if they do it like they're doing it on the phone, then that's something that's actually free, a completely free Absolute. Service at the moment, isn't it? So it'll be fascinating to see whether that becomes a sort of a paid option, or whether Microsoft are just saying, look, when you buy Windows, we'll actually back it up to the cloud for you at no charge, which actually sounds rather handy, right?
Pretty decent.
I mean, they're not backing up everything. It's not a sort of a full hard drive backup, but a lot of key settings and so on. And they already do that to a degree. When you log in with your Microsoft ID, there's a lot of stuff that sort of synchronizes in terms of settings. But it looks like they might be taking that to the next level. And certainly good if you've got photos and so on that are landing on your Windows tablet or device, having those automatically synchronized to SkyDrive. Now, one of the other things I noticed looking at it was that SkyDrive integration also goes much deeper into the operating system, to the point where, for instance, today if we use the Microsoft Surface RT or some of those, there's not many of them, but one of the Windows RT-based tablets, in conjunction with, say, Microsoft Office, you can't really hook that up in quite the way you might like to with sort of synchronized local files to the cloud. I mean, you can do that certainly within Office itself, but you don't have sort of full flexibility. It looks as though maybe that SkyDrive integration there at an operating system level will give you that closer cloud integration, which looks kind of handy.
And it's nice because it gives you that functionality which you've got with Dropbox already, but now built into an RT means your tablet's cloud-enabled.
This makes me wonder whether they're sort of aiming more at the corporate market with this update, or
Well, SkyDrive is predominantly a consumer product rather than a corporate product.
That's right.
There is SkyDrive Pro, which is the corporate one. So I guess there's a possibility that they start with, this next step is SkyDrive. The next one further along allows you some sort of corporate cloud synchronization. And knowing that a lot of Microsoft customers are business-wise, you can see it maybe progressing in that direction. But it does seem like it's... it puts some pressure on the other players in the tablet space. Talking about Apple and Google in terms of where they're moving the operating system to.
The other thing about this major update of Windows is we haven't really seen big updates like this for years and years. And I might be wrong, but the biggest one in history that I remember is XP Service Pack 1, which added a whole load of new functionality into Windows XP. And I can't really think of anything else since then.
Other than a full sort of paid for version upgrade.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, they still haven't actually made any announcement around Windows Blue. There's nothing really official. It's just this is leaked out. There's some possibilities there that they might charge for it, or there might be something else to it. But it does sound as though this will be a free, likely be a free upgrade from, the snippets that we've heard. Certainly what we've heard reported by Mary Jo Foley, for instance, from ZDNet, others seem to be sort of backing up that, we're going to see these things in between the major updates. And I think it's really, really good to see, and it addresses some of the shortcomings or frustrations people have had with Windows 8.
I do one,
and there's some areas of it where it just hasn't been as mature as other platforms. This maybe takes it past some of them in some regards.
I do wonder whether this might be an annual update because of the way in which it's got Internet Explorer 11 bundled with it, and so usually these service packs come out with different versions of IE.
But we were traditionally seeing new versions of Internet Explorer every maybe 3 years, and this looks like a bit of a step up. In the direction of, I guess we see, very regular version updates from Google with Chrome, and also Firefox gets very, very regular updates. So yeah, maybe Microsoft were being a little bit left behind there with those guys having released, you know, 5, 10, 15, you know, updates between, you know, Microsoft would come out with one. So not a bad thing. And it looks as though there might be some closer cloud integration there also with Internet Explorer. And you know, but, I mean, we haven't seen all of that yet, but there's a suggestion that might become a little bit more Chrome-like. And, you know, Chrome has that benefit of being able to move around devices and, you know, take your tabs and other bits and pieces with you. And there's a level of that with Internet Explorer now on Windows 8, but this looks as though it could go somewhat further.
It's certainly not Windows 9, is it?
Nor is it the end of the desktop. I mean, the fact is that with Metro, you know, surfacing all these new configurations from control panel up to a touch interface, you've got to realise you don't need to go into desktop anymore, or very little, to change things.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's good for those situations where you're wanting to use your, you know, say a tablet just purely as a tablet. There'll be a lot more you can do. You know, we're seeing an improvement in the built-in apps, some extra built-in apps coming there in the, you know, in that leaked build. There's a video editor, a very basic video editing program. There's an audio recorder, alarm app that wasn't there before. You know, these are, you know, some, I guess, fill in some gaps, but it's good. Now, the other thing that we've had actually just in the last hour or so has been updated apps that are launched well ahead of Windows Blue. A number of the built-in apps for Windows 8 have been updated for just for existing users. So we've got a new mail app there that's a dramatic improvement over the last one and draws on some of the capabilities of Windows phones, such as ability to pin particular mail subfolders back to the desktop and, you know, choose which folders you're going to synchronize. There's really quite a lot in there, and this will probably you know, be appreciated by most users, I think. Probably some frustrations for those companies, such as one locally here in Auckland, that's been building a mail app because the built-in one was somewhat limited. Chris, you've had a little bit of a look at that one, haven't you?
Yes. Look, I have Windows 8 running on my desktop at home for a little while, being an old machine of sort of 3 or 4 years, didn't have a touch screen. And the family, because it's a shared PC, got a little bit frustrated with the start screen and the touch interface, not being able to touch it. You know, it was kind of pointless, so I took it off. But I've actually just ordered an HP MVX2, which will be at home in the next few weeks. And I'm really quite excited to see some of these new developments in 8, because, you know, it's a few weeks since I've played with it. And when my new one arrives and it updates and it's got all these new bells and whistles, you know, it's going to be quite exciting. I mean, one of the things that I didn't like about Windows 8 as it shipped when it first came out was the mail app and the fact that it was so simple. And again, for a lot of people, that's fine because that's what it's aimed at. It was aimed with less Chrome, what they call Chrome, you know, fewer buttons, fewer distractions away from what the core function of the app is. But I can see this update is adding in some of the Chrome that maybe was stripped out or not
quite the Chrome, but certainly some of the features that were missing. And you know, I've mostly used you know, Outlook, and you know, you get used to all the powerful capabilities of Outlook, but then you switch to your smartphone and it's very basic. You know, the smartphone mail apps that we're now used to across iOS, Windows Phone, Android, generally pretty good. But actually, we had a lesser experience than on your phone on Windows 8's built-in mail app. So
absolutely.
I think this is definitely a good move forward. Now, talking around Windows 8 and touch screens, what's the device there that we've got? We've got a Dell device here. Now, this was one of the ones that that was announced at the Windows 8 launch, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is the Dell XPS 12. And it kind of looks like something out of a science fiction movie when it's in its convertible state. It's basically a hybrid ultrabook. So, you know, in one form it's an ultrabook, but then you flip the screen round and it sort of pivots in the middle of the frame.
So you've got a frame right around the screen, and you can spin the screen actually inside the frame. So you can't remove the screen like you can with some of the convertibles and just have the screen as a tablet, but you can flip it around, and then with the lid closed, the screen is actually facing out. So you've got a big, thick, chunky tablet, yeah, I suppose. Absolutely.
It's a bit similar to the old Toshibas where you could sort of twist the screen around the base and then collapse it back down, and you're left with that same form factor.
Yeah, there was Toshiba, I think, ThinkPad that did something. That's right. Something similar.
I've seen pictures of this around for months, and I keep looking at it thinking, there's no way that can work, and there's no way that can be tough enough for everyday use. It looked to me very gimmicky, and when it arrived, and I've got it for a couple of weeks, I was actually really surprised. It's very sturdy. It's very tough. It's quite a heavy machine, but
yeah,
I mean,
it does seem really, you know, solid, and yeah, not something that's about to fall to pieces.
But it's a full Ultrabook. It's running a Core i5 processor. I forget what the RAM is in it, but it's pretty hefty.
Yeah.
So you know, this is a main machine that converts to a tablet. So it's pretty darn cool.
And what sort of price point are those coming in at? They're sort of
somewhere around about $2,000.
Yeah, $2,200, including just.
Right. Okay. All right. So that's one option. Now, what's the other? There's another tablet we've got here that we've been having a play around with. This is the Asus, isn't it? Now this runs a it's a sort of iPad type form factor. Running the Atom chip, so it runs still runs a full Windows 8 Pro on it, but it's not your super high end chip. Now, playing around with the tablet itself seemed okay, but we came a little bit unstuck when we were trying out the accessories. Right, David, what's your thought on the magnetically attached cover and keyboard bits and pieces? Rate them out of 10.
Absolutely, I'd have to give them at least a 2 out of 10.
Oh, well done, Asus.
That much.
That's right. Substantially under-engineered. I mean, in comparison to the, obviously, the, you know, the EliteBook type hybrid, the Dell we were just looking at, great quality build, nice brushed chrome. This comes with sort of rubbery silicone type. I've no idea what this material is, but it's just so poor. The hinging is flimsy at best. And the keyboard that they conclude is almost an afterthought. So.
Yeah. It's that sort of disappointing. It reminds me of, worse in a different way, but the Lenovo's ThinkPad Tablet 2, the keyboard associated with that did seem like an afterthought. It doesn't sort of, you know, physically connect properly back to the tablet, so it needs its own Bluetooth connection and so on, doesn't seem to work very well. Not something that probably any of us here would put our stamp of approval on and say, no. Hey, race out and get that as a convertible sort of device that could work as a laptop and a tablet.
One thing going for the Asus VivoTab, though, was that it is quite light.
I mean, it's good. Just purely as a tablet, it seems fine. But if you want to attach the keyboard and so on, that side of it is where the disappointment comes in.
I'd go out and get one of those Microsoft wedge mice and the matching keyboard that goes with it. I think a Bluetooth, you know. The keyboard with the Asus, as somebody that spends 90% of his time typing on the computer, I couldn't imagine using that for more than about 5 minutes before it drove me absolutely batty. So,
I mean, the fact is, if you're going to compare this, you'd do it head-to-head with, say, the HP Envy X2, and the X2 would win hands down every time.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've got quite a range of devices in that category, now, and... yeah, I guess where the Asus will fit, and I've seen these, I think, in the likes of JB Hi-Fi and so on, is they will be bought on price, and probably for people that are wanting, maybe considering a Windows alternative to an iPad or an Android tablet, they want to pay a little bit more to get Windows. But maybe not willing to step up to the full functionality devices.
Certainly great for consumption. pretty poor for creation, I'd say.
Yeah. Now, other devices we've got kicking around, there's the... Chris, you bought the...
Kobo Arc?
Yeah, the Kobo Arc. Now, this is sort of similar in form factor to Google's Nexus 7 Android tablet. And I guess the news about this device this week is it's just had the Jelly Bean update, Android update become available for it. Overall, quite a nice little tablet. As I say, sort of similar to the Nexus 7. Both in pricing and in form factor, a little bit chunkier, but it's very much aimed at being an ebook reader, much like the Kindle Fire, for instance. What have you found as stood out to you about the Kobo?
Oh, it's form factor without a doubt. I updated it this week, just when the update came, and actually there's not a heck of a lot of difference in usability from the previous version of Android that was on there, which I think was Ice Cream Sandwich from memory.
It's great though to see that on Android now, where with the newer devices, that are starting with a 4.0 build of Android. More often than not, we're seeing them able to be upgraded to a newer version, and that was one of the big frustrations with the earlier versions of Android. Seems like they're really smoothing that out now.
I mean, absolutely.
It's not perfectly consistent, but I think they're really streets ahead of where they were, and it's great to see, even Kobo, the Kobo devices, which, aren't, they're ebook readers, they're not, aimed maybe at quite the same market as a raw sort of clean Android built device, but they're still getting the upgrades.
Absolutely. I mean, my son, who's 7, my oldest son, I've got 3 kids, he's really into reading, and I've just given him a Kobo recently, and he is just ploughing through books on it. It's kind of his first computer, really. I mean, he shares computers with other people in the house and does things, but to have one that he can take to bed and read... it's just fantastic, and the Arc, is just a really nice experience. The screen is crystal clear. It's good to read in bed, with the lights out. If you're reading an ebook, and you've got the added bonus of it being a full blown Android tablet as well. So it's a really nice device.
I do like the smaller form factor tablets, I've got to say, and I've got. I sort of moved between the iPad mini, which is my favorite sort of device at that size at the moment, and the Nexus 7. But I've got to say, I use the iPad mini a lot more. But in that form factor, I think they're really, really useful sort of device to have around the home, whether you're sitting on the couch watching telly or wherever. Big step up from your phone.
Absolutely.
Not such a big step up from the Note 2, which we've just got our hands on the 4G LTE variant of this. So I'm looking forward to doing a few speed tests on this just to see how fast it goes. But I guess that's the other sort of form factor of device, so the larger smartphones that are merging into the tablet type sizes as well. So lots and lots of devices in this space, but that's certainly an area where Microsoft are missing out at the moment because they just don't have anything in that game. But we hear some rumors of bits and pieces coming down the track. And I can see these updates with Windows Blue maybe suiting a smaller tablet as well. David, is that something you're looking out for, a smaller tablet, or are you pretty happy with full-blown size and just between that and your phone?
Well, for me, I've got a 7-inch tablet. And
is that the Telecom one?
Yeah, that's the Telecom ZTE. And it's not terrible, but it's not great either. It's got resistive touch rather than capacitive touch, and I use it for my kids to play games on. It's great for some Android kids apps and things. But
it's not great for anything, that tablet.
Well, no,
it's
I'm trying to find a good reason to say it's great, but really it's one of those units you get for review that you think, gosh, this is terrible, and it's no value at all. But the fact is the kids can use it, and they get quite frustrated with resistive touch. Obviously, the fact you can only click in one place at any one time, you don't have multi touch. So I'm certainly looking at something in that space as well.
I'm surprised they haven't flushed it down the toilet or something.
But you get what you pay for, right? I mean, that's the thing Android.
And I mean, at the time, you know, there wasn't really anything else at that price point. And,
no.
You know, the 7-inch tablets that we've just been chatting about, you know, those have come down really to the low price points. We've got HP about to release, I don't think it's arrived just yet, but it's not far off, their new 7-inch tablet into the New Zealand market. That comes in at sub $230. You know, there's some really competitive, you know, options coming in that are Android and are pretty cool, you know, consumer devices.
If you'd have talked that form factor and that price 5 years ago, people would have looked at you as though you'd just beamed down from the Enterprise, wouldn't they?
Well, they still should, because when I look at these, and then I look at, you know, we look at, say, the... you know, the latest smartphones, you know, there's a huge difference in price. Which brings us to the topic of Samsung's Galaxy S4. Now, this is kind of, I guess, the hot phone at the moment that's, you know, nearly here. You know, there's a lot of anticipation that sort of people have built up around it. We're told it's going to be here, you know, by late April in the New Zealand market. Telecom have announced their pricing for it, and they're starting retailing it at $1,149, which is a bit of a surprise. Last week on the podcast, I suggested that there was, can't remember my exact words, but along the lines of little or no chance that it would be priced higher than the Galaxy S3 was at launch. That came in at $1,049, so we're seeing a $100 price increase. Now, what we don't know is what Vodafone and 2 Degrees will launch at. And in fact, we've already seen a precedent this year of Vodafone launching at a lower price than Telecom and Telecom matching it very, very quickly, if not instantly. In fact, Chris, you've got there the HTC Windows Phone 8S.
Yep.
Telecom originally announced that at $499. Vodafone announced it within days at $449, and Telecom, I believe, matched that $449 price point. So, you know, although we've got this $1,149 price for the Galaxy S4, it is actually quite possible in our local market that that some competition will stir things up again. So, you know, I guess we've got to appreciate having three carriers.
I do wonder whether our friends at Samsung are doing a bit of an Apple on us in terms of a premium product. I mean, the S4 is taking that premium model, I guess, of the phone that's been accepted as the Samsung Galaxy, and saying, hey, at $1,149, this is what you get for a premium product, much like Apple sells in that way. I guess the irony is the fact that where we are now, the New Zealand dollar is actually stronger than when the S3 came out, and so you'd expect the price to even be lower because of the foreign exchange rate. So surely they're trading on the brand of Samsung Galaxy.
What's your take on that, Chris?
I don't think you can mention Samsung in a sentence without mentioning Apple. And
well, they really are the two you know, the two leaders in the mobile space right now.
I mean, did you watch?
And they're streets ahead of anybody else in terms of market share.
Absolutely.
In terms of attention. I mean, we were looking here at the Sony Xperia Z before, really nice phone, but the noise in the market around it, you know, there's very little about it.
You're almost saying who? Sony? Who?
Yeah,
and that's terrible to say because I mean that, you know. Again, 10 years ago, they were
massive.
That's right.
Once upon a Sony, it seems.
But such is the technology world, where things can move extremely quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they do, and they are.
Did you watch the Samsung Galaxy launch on YouTube? The S4.
Yeah, watched most of the live feed there,
because that was really an Apple event. I was waiting for the sort of Steve Jobs or somebody to
run
step
on stage.
Well, I'm not sure about the storytelling. It was somewhat.
It was culturally different. Let's
yeah,
say.
It was somewhat different to an Apple launch. It's somewhat different to what a launch would be if it took place in New Zealand.
Sure.
At least it was at the .com mansion. you know, there may be some similarities there, but yeah, quite a different launch, but. You know, probably very effective for them that they were able to, you know, get people to watch that and to take in a lot of those features over the hour, or you know, in the direction of an hour that presentation ran for just to show off the phone. But, and there are a lot of features that did need a bit of time for you to make sense of them. And often we hear about features, and you can't see how relevant they are unless you see them in action. So you can understand why they gave it a go.
Yeah, but the Samsung Galaxy line is becoming a cult.
Well, my wife runs phone. A Samsung Galaxy, and her expectation probably is that her next phone that I get her will be the Samsung Galaxy S4. It's got the same appeal, I guess, of going through the iPhone series. You just expect to upgrade to the next device. I mean, what's her handset now? 3 years old. So it's time to be cycled definitely into the S4 at $1,149.
There you go.
But we are entering into
get
the,
one ordered.
We are entering into the cult of Samsung. You know, people just like 5 years ago, where people were religiously just queuing up for Apple products. It's now happening in the Samsung space with the Android phones.
Well, Samsung sort of made fun of Apple with some of their videos of people queuing up and so on.
Aren't
so
they great?
You know, do you think in the future that the table might be turned?
Well, that's
and
what
Apple will be doing a mock of a Samsung video in the other direction.
I was kind of thinking along those lines.
I had to throw that out there.
It sounds totally bizarre.
But,
yeah, it does.
Yeah. All right, well, I think some fascinating times ahead, and no doubt Apple have got some interesting products up their sleeve this year, but they seem to do, well, certainly at the moment, be doing a reasonably good job of keeping those hidden. So, we'll see what the year ahead, delivers us in new products. But I think pleasing to see, a bunch of new devices that come out that take advantage of our new, 4G LTE networks that are launching here in New Zealand. Of course, we've got Vodafone at this stage, but, we're very much anticipating announcements from Telecom during the year, and they've said that they'll have, LTE live in some form by the end of the year. And likely 2 degrees will follow that probably into 2014 we would imagine with their 4G. So
quite exciting as well with Vodafone with their launch, obviously around the RBI originally, that they stated that 4G upgrades,
the rural broadband initiative.
That's right. Sorry, yeah. With the rural broadband, that they were going to do upgrades to the existing or to the new sites to 4G as well.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So those of our customers not just Vodafone customers, because there are other people that are selling the RBI services, but. Those listeners that are in rural areas and have been looking forward to the Rural Broadband Initiative in its various forms or have access to that already, we'll be able to benefit from those cell sites that are scattered around the rural regions being bumped up to 4G, which will deliver them some pretty impressive performance. I guess what we've got to hope for is some increased data caps because, compared to those of us in the city, they get dramatically smaller data caps, which is, I guess, the norm with mobile networks. All right. Now, in other news, we've got Telecom on the verge of launching ultra-fast broadband. In fact, when many of our listeners catch this episode, the ultra-fast broadband offerings from Telecom will have launched. That announcement takes place midday on Wednesday, and we'll be bumping a bunch of info up on the ufb.org.nz website, which is the website that came out of our original page on the NZ Tech Podcast site, of all the ultra fast broadband news and details, and particularly the pricing plans. So we'll have those Telecom pricing plans up there alongside the offerings from the likes of Orcon and WorldNet and the other internet providers that have been providing UFB or ultra fast broadband for some time. So I think that's sort of pretty positive for ultra fast broadband that Telecom are coming on board, because that means we're going to see a fair bit of publicity behind the ultra fast broadband as they move into the market, I would imagine. Do you think this is a good thing, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just hoping that this is all in place by the time the Windows Blue comes down the pipe.
So you can download it super fast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Two-minute job instead of, I don't know, 20 minutes. I'm just... Who knows?
Well, it is like that. The ultra-fast broadband is phenomenal. The other area where, you know, I found it fantastic is doing those sort of online backups and, you know, doing, file uploads and, uploading podcasts and the like can be a pretty slow process. But if you can do that over a fiber internet connection, it's just, you know, dramatically faster and much, much better experience.
And the prices have got to come down as well. I mean, maybe this will drive more uptake and, pricing will be a lot more competitive.
Well, I think it has to drive uptake because, a very large percentage in the direction of, you know, half of New Zealanders connect to the internet through telecom. And, a lot of those users, are not going to change to another provider anytime soon. Mm. So, there will be a bunch of people out there that have just been waiting for this to happen before they jump onto the ultra-fast broadband wagon. Now, what we've heard is initially they're going to be launching the service in conjunction with Chorus, which covers a whole bunch of areas around New Zealand, but it does exclude Northland, it does exclude Christchurch and Rangiora, and it also includes Hamilton. Excludes Hamilton and Tauranga. So there's a number of areas that they're not covering initially, and of course UFB itself has only been rolled out so far, I think, to... what are we talking about? I think by mid-year, talking about 200,000 homes out of the, I think, in the direction of 1.25 million that they're aiming to reach. So, we're partway along that track, but I think this is going to be helpful in that, and I hope that they move quickly to work with the other local fibre companies so we get those other parts of the country covered off fairly quickly. All right, well, that's telecom's big announcement. So we'll look out for the specifics, and we'll maybe give that some discussion next week. We've got a few more things to talk about regarding telecom over the next couple of weeks. So we'll keep that one on the agenda for those discussions. Of course, a lot of rumours going around at the moment around telecom having to lay off a lot of staff. So we'll have some firm effects on that too. Probably over the next fortnight, I would hope.
You've got to wonder too whether all the problems that they have with Extra, which obviously wasn't Extra but was Yahoo, but is going to affect customer loyalty for telecom.
Yeah, I mean, whenever something goes wrong, right, and you hurt your customers in some way, it's got to it's got to put the relationships at risk. And it's certainly easier now than it ever was before for people to use somebody other than telecom. Mm. So I think telecom has to put itself in a position of delivering great products at fair and appropriate sort of prices. Yes, we will look forward to that announcement, just to see how those how those service plans and so on come together, how those plans come together. Now, what else have we got here? Now, Microsoft have just finished up their Imagine Cup contest that they hold. They hold it. It's a worldwide event, and they've been holding it here in New Zealand for quite a number of years now. Chris, how would you describe the Imagine Cup? You can tell us because you've been on one of the judging panels this year.
Yeah. Well, it's for those that don't know about it, it's a competition, international competition that Microsoft runs. It's aimed at sort of 16-year-olds and up who are in the innovation space. A lot of them are sort of computer coders or certainly involved in the tech space, and the whole idea is to try and encourage them to change the world with technology, if you like. And I was on the judging panel on Sunday for this year's Imagine Cup for one of the categories, which was world citizenship, and we sat through 10 teams of Dragon Den style, really, interviews, if you like. So each team would come and give a 10-minute presentation about their idea, and some of them had even gone as far as building prototypes, that actually worked. And then there's a 15-minute question and answer from the judges. And it's pretty tough questions around marketing and application and where are you going to get seed funding from if this takes off. And the whole point was really to select a winner that could take their idea onto the world stage for the national finals in Russia in July.
St. Petersburg, was it?
Yeah, St. Petersburg. So it was actually quite interesting because I sat down and read the judges' pack before the event, and there were two teams that stood out to me in the 10 that we were judging from just the ideas. When it came to the presentations, those were the two that came first and second.
Wow, so they had really not only put it down well on paper, but they were able to present well and obviously able to back up the initial
absolutely
ideas that they'd shared.
And yeah, I mean, you know, judging was really tough because it's really hard from a one sheet of A4 and 10 minutes or 25 minutes with a team to know just where they're at with some of these ideas and how well developed they are. But there were two basically percentage points between the two top teams when we actually broke it down, and we were pretty split on who should win. and it was a really close race. So the winning team came from the University of Auckland and have come up with a ultraviolet sensor which can be attached to a wristband or a sun hat, and it can measure the ultraviolet radiation wherever you are, and it feeds it back to an app on the smartphone
and lets you know if you're going to get burned.
Absolutely. The other part of it was that you fed in your sunscreen SPF, and it would give you a reminder at the right time to say you need to reapply sunscreen. So those are the guys that are winning.
Sounds like a bit of an app for yuppies perhaps more than it does for innovation.
Yeah, that's what some of the other judges were saying. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a really good idea, and when I read the summary early on, I thought these guys are probably going to be up there, and they were. But the other team that I felt pretty strongly about, having been in the third world and been involved in aid work over the years, was an app called AppSense, and their app, which they had developed for the developing countries. And the whole idea of that was, in the developing countries, there's very seldom good records, medical records. And some doctors see 20,000 people and don't have time for paperwork. So this app that they developed was meant to be installed on a smartphone and self-regulated. So you'd go to the doctor, you'd fill out your details. Next time you go, or even when you go, you can wave it under his nose and say, is this right? Have I recorded my stuff right? And then that could be shared. And actually, the guys that developed this from Waikato University had a tap on the shoulder from UNICEF as soon as it was announced that they were finalists and it was published in the paper.
Oh, wow.
And UNICEF was saying, this looks absolutely awesome, and we want to know some more from what I understand.
That's great.
So I could really see that being used. And they came second. I would have liked to have seen them come first. But that's not parochial. That's just my thought was, what's going to save more lives?
Fair enough.
And I thought that might.
Well, it depends because, being a Microsoft thing, you know, it's all about coming up with the ideas. But I was thinking about the sunscreen app would actually work much better on the Sony Xperia Z that's, waterproof, dust and sandproof. Then probably, I don't think there's any Windows phones that are quite up to that task.
But there could be in a couple of years.
But there might be very soon. So, that's cool. Well, congrats to all those entered. It's great for, great for the big tech companies to get behind these sort of, contests. And, Google do a lot of stuff around, encouraging software development and so on as well. But this is one where Microsoft have really been, getting behind students in New Zealand for a long time, and definitely a pat on the back to them and everyone who's participated, and especially those who have taken home some prize money. I guess the team that are heading off to St. Petersburg.
Infinity Tech.
Congrats. Well, I think that's just about us for this week on the New Zealand Tech Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. Now, some of you may have noticed in your feed, if you're a regular listener to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, You may have noticed an extra podcast in your feed. We have just launched a new podcast, which is we're treating as an offshoot to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This one is called the New Zealand Digital Podcast. So if you want to know more about that, have a little bit of a listen in, and we explain it all there. Episode one is online now. At least the first couple of episodes will be available directly to NZ Tech Podcast listeners through our main feed. We're getting that set up on iTunes. We're waiting on the hoops we have to jump through with Apple for that to happen. And ultimately, that will have its own feed and be available as a separate podcast. For those of you that are involved in the digital world, the digital media, online social media space, and so on, certainly hope you'll enjoy listening to that one. Now, we did talk last week around a little giveaway coming up. And we still have a Google Nexus 4 handset here from 2Degrees that we will be giving away. The details of that are going to come up next week. We have actually a bunch of stuff to give away in conjunction with a little survey we're running. So we're hoping that everyone will listen in next week and we'll be able to participate in that. We're just after a bit of feedback from everyone. We want to know what works on the podcast, what you want more of, and to get a few stats about our audience, because that always helps us in getting hands-on gadgets from the tech companies when they understand who our audience is. So really encourage everyone to participate in that. We're going to really make it worth your while. We've got I think probably a few $1,000 worth of giveaways coming up. So yes, we would we'd love it if you'd participate in that one. All right, well, that's us for this week. Now, David, we can find you online. Twitter, is that at David Hallett?
That's me.
Now, it's HALLELT.
That's right, David.
Oh, I've got it right.
Absolutely
right.
Compacted.
Excellent. And, of course, we can find both of you guys online at waikatotimes.co.nz.
You can.
Or stuff.co.nz, where all the Waikato Times stuff sort of sits.
In the technology section. Yep.
Excellent.
And you can get me on Twitter at Chris Gardner NZ.
Your new Twitter handle.
Well, you want to change it because I wanted it to be mine. So at Chris, C-H-R-I-S, Gardner is G-A-R-D-N-E-R-N-Z. That's me.
Did I tweet before without the NZ on the end? I may have done.
I don't know.
Oh, I might be in trouble.
Maybe my phone.
All right. Well, apologies if I've done that. And of course, I can be tracked down online on Twitter at NZ. Tech Podcast is our main one. My personal one is at Paul Spain. You can find us, of course, online, nztechpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook and Google Plus and the like as well. So, hey, thanks everyone for joining us. We'll catch you next week. See ya.